Blog Talk Radio.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Listen to Inside the Park. Inside the Park. The RSG family. My usual suspects with me. Hot baseball topic. We're just going to jump right into it. I always tell them.
Gambling.
What do
you think about gambling? It's not gambling when you know you're
going to
win.
He's not coming out late. The RSG family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park. RSG family, what is going on? It's good to be back. We've been we were out of commission last week. Took a little leave. I was gone the week before. I got to say, it's good to be back. Feels like I'm right on time. Things are heating up. It's September in the baseball world, which means the playoffs are right around the corner. So we got a lot of stuff to touch on today. A lot of stuff. I want to get on into it. But Mike, Hank, welcome back, fellas.
Hey, it's good to be back, and it, you know, it's time to talk about some September baseball. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Indeed, a lot of people tune out because the NFL is kicking off, but it's really starting to get good, and we're seeing a lot of the seeds being laid for this playoff season coming up. So I want to jump right into it, and I want to throw it to you, Mike, first on this one. Cincinnati Reds, your hometown team, they got a comfortable lead. Last time I checked, they had the largest lead in any of the divisions. And news just broke this week that Aroldis Chapman, the fireballer, the horse out of the bullpen, so to speak, his fatigue is down. They're saying maybe he has a little shoulder fatigue. Are you concerned at all as to what this means for your club going into the home stretch, getting ready for the playoffs?
I think you're always concerned when you have a fastball pitcher losing velocity. They checked him out, just the other day, and so they didn't see anything structurally wrong, no real inflammation. So, you know, given that they've got this lead, it's a great opportunity. They're going to sit him for the next 5 days and just not let him pitch. And there's a little bit of precedent for this as well, especially with Chapman. He's gone through periods this year where his velocity would go down for a little bit where they were working him a lot, and specifically when interleague play came along and he had a zero ERA, then the next thing you know, everybody's lighting him up for a week. They sat him for a couple days. He got his velocity back. He was fine. So I think the fact that they have the lead makes this very doable, and he should be fine. So I'm not overly concerned with it. In fact, I think it's pretty opportunistic to give your relief pitcher an opportunity to rest his arm.
And let me just lay some groundwork for the listeners. I know we jumped right into it, but typically when pitchers show that their velocity is down, that is a key sign that something's not right. Aroldis Chapman is a guy who, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, he's right up there around 98, 100 some odd miles per hour, and I think his velocity dipped quite a bit, which tipped the ball club off to say something's not right here, so they're checking him out. And they're going to sit him down, hopefully to strengthen that arm, so he'll be ready to go in the playoffs. Hank, are you following the Reds run at all?
I really have been. And you know what? I think it's a very smart move for the Reds. You know, it wasn't so much so that he had lost his velocity, but he was getting sort of erratic, too. You know, Aroldis was lights out for quite a bit of the second half, and actually most of the first half. And then in his last outing, he just seemed like he couldn't find the plate if you gave him a GPS. So I think that was one thing that kind of had him concerned as well. So, you know, he's tired. He's pitched a lot of innings. young pitcher. I think it's, you know what, it's real smart. You got a 10-game lead. This is the time if you're going to give guys a blow, you know, with 21 games left in the season, this is the time to do it. You know, I think the Reds can cruise in, especially the rest of their pitching staff, and get them ready for the playoffs. I think it's very smart.
And think about it, you guys, the trade they made at the deadline, which was kind of not a limelight trade, but they got Jonathan Broxton for the Royals, who saved 23 games for them in the first half of the season for KC. So they have a legitimate closer ready to go right now. They just pumped him into the ninth inning spot, and there you go. Is he Chapman? No. But he's a guy you can hand the ball to and feel pretty confident about it.
Let me just go ahead.
Jackson Broxton, I like it. You guys had a lot of promise in that bullpen at the beginning of the season. It'd be a shame if Chapman's not right come playoff time. You guys, that bullpen was starting to take shape at the beginning of the year. Marshall and Chapman, it looked like it'd be something to contend with.
Well, and that's a little bit of a misnomer, too, because Chapman did not start off as the closer of this team. He was actually third in line. People forget Ryan Matson was signed to be the closer, right, in the offseason. So he went down in spring training. So then plan B was Sean Marshall to come in and close. And Sean Marshall was actually the closer of this team for the first month and a half, 40-some games. And then Chapman came in after Marshall was ineffective for a while. So you're talking about a guy with 35 saves who missed, you know, a quarter of the season, or at least wasn't the closer role. So, but they do have the best bullpen ERA in the major leagues, so they've been doing pretty well, no matter who's been in there.
Hey, Hank, let me get your thought on this real quick. I'm going to put you on the spot. Rumor, it may be a rumor that Mike was drumming up for Aroldis Chapman for Cy Young. Can you get behind that one? I can't confirm or deny Mike saying this, but it's a rumor that he may have started this.
You know what? It wouldn't be that far out of the ordinary, you know, for a relief pitcher to win the Cy Young. In fact, you know, around here, RJ, we had several years ago a relief pitcher not only win the Cy Young but win the MVP. That's going to be tough, really. For the Cy Young, there's some strong pitchers now in the National League that's having some incredible years. But if Cincinnati continues to dominate the National League like they are right now, he's going to get some votes. So, no, I don't think it's that far-fetched. But I do have to ask Mike one thing. It's killing me. I'm looking at the Reds. They're having an incredible year in the Central. You know, they're running away with it, the division with his hated Cardinals. Help me understand, help the folks over here in Michigan understand, how often does the manager change the lineup from night to night? Just enlighten me, please.
How often? So Dusty is probably the most maligned manager in the major leagues. He is not popular with the Cincinnati fan base. And, now that the rosters are expanded, it's a little bit different. But Dusty is one of the most stubborn managers around, specifically that you could be blindfolded and not tell me who you have starting that day, but I'll tell you that the center fielder's leading off and the shortstop's batting second. I don't care if Luzinski, who's playing shortstop or center field, and some other big dude at second base. He is so old school in the way he does his lineups that it drives people absolutely nuts. And one of the issues they're having right now is Todd Frazier, and I love the nickname he got on baseball, the MLB Network, they call him the Todd Father. But lighten it up, right, as a rookie, really carried that team when Votto was hurt. He's on the bench now because Scott Rowland's back with his .237 average. So Todd Frazier needs to sit the bench for a while. So Dusty, even though they've won a ton of games, man, he gets it constantly. And I would not be surprised if Dusty is not back with the team next year. His contract's up after this year, and he doesn't have an extension in place.
Are you a Dusty fan, Mike?
No. No, I'm not. I think the presence of certain and you know, every team has this, you know, but the presence of Corey Patterson on the Reds and getting a lot of at bats. The presence of Miguel Cairo hitting 138, getting a lot of at bats. Wilson Valdez. these veterans that come in, you know, and play a role, but they don't produce, continue to get at-bats, at that point, please, just get rid of the guy and let someone else play. But that's Dusty's M.O., and that's why he's a player's manager. Veterans like to play for him because they know he'll stick with them. As a fan, it's tough. It's tough. You know, it's what September. If a guy's hitting 138, guess what? He's hitting 138. He's due.
Let me say I agree wholeheartedly with you, Mike, but playing devil's advocate, can Dusty just talk to the fans and point to the scoreboard and say, hey, scoreboard, we're up 11 games. Well, what else is there to talk about?
You're exactly right. So in the end, it matters if you win or if you don't win. But I would tell you, Cincy is a very particular town, okay? That's a nice way of putting it, a particular town. And either you're a Cincinnati guy or you're not. Dusty Baker has never been a Cincinnati guy, and I think it's more about Dusty than it is his moves. They're just not a big fan of Dusty there. So he could be 100.
Bring back Pete Rose, huh?
I'm sorry?
Bring back Pete Rose, huh?
You know, it sounds silly, but yeah, sometimes that's what they want. That's exactly what they want. So I don't necessarily agree with that. For me, you know, it's the fact that I think the Reds have a lot of young talent on that team, and I would have liked to see them get even more opportunity than they did this year. But, you know, he's winning. So if he came back, would I be crushed? No, wouldn't be crushed. Makes perfect sense. But I wouldn't be surprised because I don't think he's a good fit for that city.
Okay. let's keep it in the Central. And let's talk about the Pirates a little bit. We were touching on these guys a couple months ago on the show when we talked about buyers and sellers. The crew was trying to convince me that the Pirates should be buyers. Now they're fighting for 500. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they haven't finished above 500 in 20 years. So obviously they've gone on a major swoon. I want to know from you guys, is there any chance that they finish above 500? And we'll stay with the resident NL Central expert who's Reds are actually playing the Pirates right now. Mike, you think the Pirates finish above 500?
I do, because I think there's talent on that team. But, you know, we talked about this. We talked about this when you were gone, RJ. But at this point, we were very critical, at least I was critical, of the Pirates of the trade deadline not making a move. You know, they made some minor moves, but nothing that was going to help propel them to the division championship. And if you're a Pirates fan, man, aren't you upset? You know, right at the All-Star break, I believe they were a game up on the Reds at the All-Star break, and I think two on the Cardinals, and they just went in the tank. And there's no guarantee. I mean, if you had to pick the Central next year, right now, I bet you don't have the Pirates first. I bet you don't even have them second. Some people may even have them fourth going into next year behind the Brewers as well. So I think they're talented. I also think they're one player deep. You know, with Andrew McCutchen's not hitting and driving in tons and tons of runs, they're in trouble. But I hope they get above 500. I really do. But if I was a Pirates fan, I'd be looking to hit something.
Hank, what say you, above 500?
I can't see them finishing above 500. This turned into what was a real feel-good story at the All-Star break to another disappointing season for the Pittsburgh Pirates. This is the second year in a row in the second half that this team has absolutely disappeared. You know, when you look at what they've done right now, they've lost the last five games in a row. They'll probably lose tonight to Cincinnati. And then you got to look at what they got down the road. Now, all of a sudden, you got the reemergence of the Milwaukee Brewers and the Philadelphia Phillies that decide that they want to start playing baseball in September. And you got to look at how the Pirates are going to do this. These teams are going to be playing for their lives. So where I thought they were going to be able to do it. They're only three. They were starting tonight only three games up above 500. And, you know, they're going to finish the season with the Cubs, Brewers, Astros, Mets, and the Reds. It's going to be tough for them. I mean, you know, they might can sweep the Cubs or the Astros, but, you know, the rest of those teams are going to be playing for their lives. And unfortunately, I don't see them finishing strong.
Yeah, it seems like they do this every year, like Mike said. And I don't know if I can kill the GM for not making a move. Like I said, I don't think they're ready. I think, you know, they just have McCutcheon and a bunch of other guys. Will their time come? Yes, they have a lot of talent in that farm system, but to sell out the farm system to go at it this year, I don't know that I would have done it either. So I kind of understand. I hate it for Pirate fans, but, you know, I get it. So, you know, what are you going to do?
RJ, if you're a Pirate fan, and especially with the two wild card teams getting in, even as playing as bad as they are, I think they're 2.5 games behind the Cardinals for the last spot. And don't you owe it to this town, to your fan base, to say, you know what, we're making the playoffs? Because I think we all agree that they're not one or two players away from winning a World Series. They're not. They're more than that. But if you gave away a couple mid-level prospects, maybe one of your top guys, to get just a hitter, someone who's going to drive in runs, don't you owe that 20 years under 500 and no guarantee you're going back next year?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I kind of followed the trade deadline. I was pretty intrigued by it when it was going down. And the Pirates are they're top heavy in top talent because they've been picking at the top of the draft for so long. They have two stud pitchers, Garrett Cole, I believe, and Jameson Taillon. That's what everybody wanted. They didn't want to talk about mid-tier prospects because they don't really have a lot of them. So teams were after those top two pitchers. Now, maybe, and this is not even a strong maybe, but maybe last year when there was one wild card and everybody got to play 3, 4, 5 games in the playoffs, maybe you pull the trigger. But to do it, to get a wild card this year where you're only guaranteed one game in the playoffs and say you lose that one game, you're done. I mean, if a tree falls in a forest, does it make a noise if no one's there to hear it? It's like, were they really in the playoffs? And do you trade off your future for a one-game crapshoot?
You know what? I got to say this. You know, this is killing me. You know, we're calling it a crapshoot. It's the playoffs, for God's sakes. I mean, you plan to get into the playoffs. And, you know, these teams I've heard, this is about the second or third time I've heard from a team saying, well, we're trying to get to the future, we're trying to do this. And, no, you don't want to mortgage your whole future. But you've got to be able to make a move when you have a chance to make a move. Now, to me, what I don't understand about the Pirates was there was some players they could have got to help Andrew McCutcheon to at least make that push, okay? And you're right. You're talking about 20 years of baseball futility, which means what? That all of these prospects that you wouldn't got that's supposed to have been your future for 20 years, they have failed. You have an opportunity right now to do something to at least make a push for your fan base, okay? Now, the next thing you're going to be hearing is they're going to try to sell Pittsburgh to somebody else because they're not winning. You know, they've got a lot of stuff going there, you know, with the new stadium and all, but for God's sakes, you got to make a move when you can. That drives me berserk. I've heard this enough, you know, but 20 years of futility and you have a shot, you've gotten close twice and you do nothing. You know, if I'm a fan, yeah, I'm pissed.
Yeah, I get being pissed. It's just, and we all know baseball is a different breed. It's not like basketball. It's not like football. The worst team can beat the best team on any given night in baseball. And that's why I call it a crapshoot because, you know, Houston Astros are pretty much a double-A team, yet they have 45 wins. I mean, anybody can win on any given night in baseball. So if you leave it up to one game, the smallest of sample sizes, anything can happen, and that's why I call it a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
You feel me?
Go Broncos. Right.
All right, let's. This next one I want to throw to our resident medical professional. If he drank his V8, I may call him a doctor today. Hey, let's talk about Brandon McCarthy, brother. He was hit in the head with a line drive, and you can help me understand all the medical terms better. But after he was hit, he had to go to the hospital. He had skull fracture, and a brain. Tell us what's going on, Hank.
A brain hematoma.
There you go.
Here's what happens, okay? When you get a skull fracture, all of a sudden your brain swells. When your brain swells, now you've got a life-threatening situation. You have a life-threatening situation because you can't get oxygen, you can't get circulation to the brain, and then portions of the brain starts to die. So that's why they had to keep him under observation, get that swelling down so that he would be okay. Now, the odd thing about that, and the odd thing about some certain brain injuries, is if you recall, if you've seen the highlights, when he got hit, he got up right away, you know, and kind of walked off on his own power. You know, people kind of, sometimes people think that, oh, he'll be all right. But what happens a lot of times, if you ever remember when you was a kid and you got hit in the head and they'll tell you don't go to sleep, because that's usually shortly after an injury like that is when something happens, the brain reacts and loses circulation and you could end up dying. So for Brandon McCarthy being very, very fortunate, you know, he's out of the hospital now. He seems to be doing well. But he, you know what? I didn't realize that that ball had fractured his skull. That was something to see. I was shocked by that. That was an eye-opener.
Who needs WebMD when you got Hank? My question to the fellas is should Major League Baseball, after seeing this, do anything to protect pitchers, i.e. make them wear helmets? I mean, we already don't use aluminum bats, but Should baseball be doing anything to prevent this from happening again? I mean, Brandon McCarthy, like Hank put it, he could have almost died on the mound. Hank, is baseball even under an obligation to do anything, and if so, should they?
Well, there's a couple of things there, okay? When you talk about a helmet, you have to ask yourself, is that going to impact how a pitcher pitches? You know, having that on his head, does it change his vision to the plate? I'm not really in favor of that. If you could talk about some sort of cap liner, you could do something like that, which will still be a Band-Aid. But moreover, if you really want to protect your pitchers, do like they did back in the day and put the mound back to where it was. The reason why they lowered the pitcher's mound in the first place was so that the hitter could have a little bit more of an advantage, okay? But now, you know, you got those line shots coming right at the pitcher's head, and you can see Brandon McCarthy could not react in time. The only thing baseball can do, you know, you got to protect yourself when you're between the lines anywhere. You know, just the hitters, just like when the ball's coming at them, you know, Tony Conigliaro years ago, you know, got nailed in the head. Bryce Florey for the Boston Red Sox years ago got hit, a pitcher, got hit with a line drive coming back. The only thing I can see you can do if you're baseball is, number one, protect yourself at all times. But if you're going to do anything, you got to bring the mounds back up. I don't see them doing that. Because, you know, you've made these band box fields, you're going to, you know, these band box stadiums, you want the fans to get the long ball.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about raising the miles back up. Mike, you got anything on this one?
I think the helmet idea is a good one. And I would, as hitters get bigger and stronger and balls keep going farther, I think we're going to see somebody die on the mound. It's just going to happen. Statistically, someone's going to get hit in the head, and they're going to die. So having a helmet on those guys, think about it. The first and third base coaches have helmets. Why is that? Well, one, they don't have gloves, right? But two, somebody died, correct, in the minor league.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. With the pitcher. Someone's going to get killed, and then it's going to be mandatory. And think of how sports change and how change happens in sports. Generally, it's very reactive, right? In hockey, it took a little girl in the stands behind the goal, you know, not right behind the goal, 25 rows up, to get hit by a puck and die before those nets went up. Same with the nets behind the plate. And actually, I've heard a lot of push for Major League Baseball to extend the netting all the way down to about the third baseline. And if you guys know what I'm talking about here, with those lined foul balls that go into the stands right above the dugouts, and,
yeah,
you know, either it's bat or a ball just like a missile for somebody. And if you, and I know you guys have been to the ballpark lately, those nets aren't an obstruction to anybody's view. I mean, they do a great job with those. So that's another thing. But really it's going to take someone getting hurt very seriously to put something on those pitchers, and you're right, they'll have to figure out, does this obscure the view, does it affect anything? In the end, everyone will have to deal with the same handicap as everybody else because everyone will have to wear a helmet. But hopefully we change the rule before somebody dies, and hopefully we'll extend the netting all the way to the third baseline before a fan gets hit in the head and the same thing happens to them. And that's the one I'm really surprised about, because think about how many fans go to a game and don't watch the game. They're talking, they're on their phone, and a line drive just comes and nails them, right? Just nails them. So this is another thing where I think baseball needs to be proactive as opposed to reactive when it comes to safety.
And, you know, putting my legal hat on, if the technology is there to do it and they don't, and that death comes after the fact, I mean, they could open themselves up to a serious lawsuit, as we've seen with this concussion thing that's going on in the NFL. And
mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's not something Bud Selig wants on his watch while he's commissioner. But
you wouldn't have anybody
that what'd you say?
That you wouldn't be able to have anybody they could call if they had a legal question, do you?
Nah, I would. Maybe some.
Nah, you should. Okay.
But I'm sure the old school pitchers will be rolling around in the grave the day Bartelli says pitchers have to wear a helmet.
You know what? I hear old school a lot, and to me that just sounds, you know, dumb. Lucky, old, and dumb. Old school, right? You know, when I played hockey, it was old school. We didn't wear a helmet. Yeah, you didn't have any teeth either, right? And you guys died 30 years prematurely. If that's a
hold
minimum,
on now.
That's
Hank
great.
Hank was on the old school side. Now take it easy.
Well, yeah, Hank is because he's old. You know, we've already established that.
Now, see, I was going to let you get away with that one, see, but then you had to go and throw me into it now, see? So what is cool now, Mike? You want to put a football helmet, face guards on the pitchers now too, right?
Okay,
hey, let's
do
put a chest protector too on them while we're at it.
Little leagues have the face mask on it. You know, it's about safety in the end, and generally, the younger kids playing emulate what the older players do. So that was true with tobacco. That was true with greenies. That was true with steroids. And it would be true with safety. So if we made the major leagues thought conscious of safety and how they protected their players, as you're seeing now at the NFL, man, that spilled down really quick. As soon as the NFL made a really big deal about concussions, you know, on our youth team, every coach had to go to a concussion seminar. You know, they had someone come out and talk to the coach. So I think it's great when major leagues lead the charge when it comes to safety, because it trickles down so fast.
You know what, though? I got to say this, though. I agree with you. I do think they need to do something, but I think they still need to look at the dynamics of the – maybe they look at the dimensions of the field a little bit more. You're right. The players are getting a little bit stronger, they're a little bit faster. Maybe they've outgrown the dimensions of the field. I have a real hard time of when you got so much safety equipment that it gets in the way of the game. And, like, when you start talking about a pitcher and a helmet, how does that fit in? How do you do that? It's going to take some technology to figure that out. You have a cap liner. And then, you know, that protects your cranium. But, you know, there's got guys that got hit in the eyes, that got hit in the jaw. You know, maybe you move the mound back another foot. You know, I mean, maybe that's these guys are throwing 100 miles an hour. It's just as dangerous for the hitters. You know, so you know that you may have to look at the dimensions of the field as well. You know, maybe like again, the players have outgrown the dimensions of it, so they should look at that.
I agree. I don't know if you guys noticed, but the Tigers took the lead. I you know, I'm sure you're not watching the game on another internet connection or anything, so.
Yeah, three to one?
3-1, you got it.
You know, that brings up another. Hey, I wanted to ask Hank this question. Hank, my relationship right now with the Tigers is kind of like the high school girlfriend who gets abused and she's damaged. Some guy cheats on her and she never wants to be in a relationship again. I've kind of like tuned out because I just know that they're going to break my heart in the end. Hank, was I wrong? They sent me a thing in the mail to order postseason tickets, and I threw it in the trash. I said, I'm not ordering postseason tickets. I don't want any parts of it, and I don't want to tie my money up knowing they're not going to make it. Was I completely off base there, Hank?
No, you were smart. And if you are a Detroit Tigers fan and you tried to follow this team since April, you're very smart to do that. The Tigers have been very much of a disappointment, you know. And it's not that they've got to go out and win 100 ball games to keep your attention, but you just want to see them play consistent baseball. And you want to see them play with a sense of urgency. What drives me absolutely crazy, I mentioned it earlier in the year, that there has to be a sense of urgency and consistency. You know, you can say what you want to about Dusty Baker. He gets on people's nerves. But look at the Cincinnati Reds. They play good defense, you know. Maybe everybody's not hitting, but the pitching is consistent. You know, all these teams that are winning this year, there's some consistency that you can point to. The A's, the Orioles, all these teams are surprising. There's a consistency. The Tigers are consistently inconsistent. They've been that way all year. When it looks like they're starting to play well, Jim Leland goes and puts in a little league lineup. I don't understand it. I don't think the fans understand it. I don't think the general manager – sometimes I don't think Leland understands it himself. Did you see the lineup he started with in this four-game series with the White Sox? That's laughable, okay? We're in September now. We got to start playing playoff baseball. I don't know if the Tigers are going to be there, and then if they get there, they're going to drive you nuts. And the only reason why they get there, in my opinion, is A, because they can beat the White Sox, because they sure the hell can't beat nobody else. And then the White Sox themselves – collapse. But outside of that, I think you're very smart, because you would lose your mind if they were to make the playoffs against somebody or and then just fold. You would go crazy. So I think you're very smart.
Wow. Yeah, hey, I checked out.
On Victor Martinez, is he coming back this year?
No.
No.
He's done.
Okay.
I would have asked you, Mike, you would have done, but the Reds have been there in a while. Forgive me.
And let me and I'm looking up and down your lineup, and as a team that's got a couple guys that hit that, but not much. You got Austin Jackson over 300. You got Cabrera over 300. Prince Fielder over 300. Delman's hitting 270. that's nice. It's a nice problem to have. So we revisit. So we talked about that trade when it happened. How's that worked out with Johnny Peralta and Anibal Sanchez? Has that worked out for you guys, for your top prospect?
Oh, you mean Omar Infante.
It was Infante. My fault.
They're interchangeable. Who gives a damn?
So
You look at that team and... You know, Anibal's had his last two outings weren't too bad, you know. Infante kind of helps out the defense a little bit. But, my God, you know, one thing I will say about Victor Martinez, he made those players be a little bit more disciplined at the plate. When they made their run last year, B-Mart was a professional hitter. I mean, he wasn't going up there hacking in the first thing that he swung at. And by and large, the rest of those hitters in that lineup look like professional hitters. They've kind of regressed back to what they used to be without him. They miss him more, you know, not being in that clubhouse than just his bat. And I think that's evident this year. What do you think, RJ?
Martinez also led the league in batting average with runners in scoring position.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big plus as well. I mean, the problem with this team, and Mike, you went down the lineup and quoted batting averages, but, I mean, you need – a softball lineup of 300 hitters if you're going to give away two runs a ball game.
Right.
You can't score three runs a game, four runs a game if you're going to give up two off errors, plus, you know, whatever else the team gets, you know, withstanding. We're always in a two-run deficit every game we start because our defense is so poor.
Wow. I'm looking at your bench numbers, too. You got nothing producing on the bench. Nothing. Ow.
There's nothing. I mean, outside of Prince, Miguel, and Austin Jackson, there's nothing. I mean, last year you had Alex Avila, who was an all-star. His numbers have declined. Peralta, he made the all-star game. His numbers have declined. It's not a fun season, Mike. And we talked about it last week. I wish I could say on the air what I said to you, but it hasn't been fun.
That's what I was thinking too. You had some very definite opinions on it.
So that's enough Tigers talk. I'm going to go grab a beer and let's do a commercial.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
Dog of the week. Mike, who you got?
All right, I'm going to go AL on you guys, throw you a curveball, and go with a guy who this week was named MLB Player of the Week for the American League. And the interesting stat that I liked about this, it's the first time he's gotten that award in 3 years. Talking about B.J. Upton and the never-say-die Tampa Bay Devil Rays. This week, 5 home runs, hitting .400. Just lights out down there. And we talked about this last month. We talked about what player coming back from injury is going to have the most effect. And I think there's a trickle-down effect, a domino effect here, with Evan Longoria coming back to that lineup and really just helping the rest of the players on that team, taking a lot of pressure off guys like B.J. Upton and lighten it up. So, Hank, I know that was your pick too. So, mazel tov to both of us, and B.J. Upton's my dog of the week, guys.
Hank, who you got for dog of the week, bro?
Oh, I'm going to go back to what I said last night on the show with the guys. Last week I wasn't here, and I was in Boston. And while I was in Boston, I had the opportunity to go to a Red Sox game at Fenway Park. First time I ever been in Fenway Park, and first time I ever got a chance to sit up in the stands, look at the Green Monster, the pesky pole, you know, a whack nostalgic about just thinking about players that played there. Unfortunately, I didn't see any of them on the Red Sox side or the Blue Jays side, for that matter. But just to be, you know, in Fenway, just to see Yawkey Way, walk down Yawkey Way, see the seats by the Green Monster, that's an incredible ballpark. On, you know, 100 years, you know, and it's a classic ballpark. So just for the experience and just, you know, for the time, Fenway Park is my dog of the week.
All right. Hey, Mike, have you been to Fenway?
I haven't, but, Hank, you sure you don't want to give that to all the parks in the American League East? I know you've done it before, but, you know, might as well get a group of them out there. You shouldn't just narrow it down to one.
Well, listen, you know what? Since you done made me 100 years old, I figured I'd pick the oldest damn ballpark in the league outside of in the American League to do it. So how does that sound, Sonny?
We need to change it to Pack of the Week. Pack of the Week.
The pack of the week.
Right. Everybody on the left side of the room, you're my pack of the week.
Okay, RJ, go ahead. Your turn.
I'm going with the Wonder Boy. This week, Mike Trout became the first player to reach a 10 wins above replacement since Barry Bonds. Typically, your MVPs typically have around a 7, 7 wins above replacement. Mike Trout's already hit 10. And it's not only for his bat, as most of you guys know, WAR takes an effect defense as well. So Mike Trout putting up Barry Bonds numbers, he's my dog of the week. So there it is. Now let's, allow me to freestyle a little bit, fellas. I was I know you guys talked about the Red Sox 2 weeks ago and where they're going with this trade, but this is just a random thought I had today, and I want to throw it out to you guys. I know, Mike, you like contracts and numbers and things, so let me throw this hypothetical out there. You, Mike and Hank, you're a GM looking for a job, and the Yankees call you and the Red Sox call you. You know, the Yankees have a bunch of money they're on the hook for, a lot of old guys they're still paying for, and then the Red Sox just dumped all this salary, and they've got a lot of money to spend on whoever in the world they want to spend. What's the better club, you guys? Who would you rather be the GM of, the Yankees or the Red Sox at this point? And I'll throw it to Mike first, because I know he likes these contract talks, discussions.
You're saying I'm dorky. Just say it, all right? I'm the smart, I'm the nerd.
I'm trying to be nice about it. I'll let Hank say that about you.
I can take it.
Go for it.
To me, this answer is easy, because I think what the Red Sox did really signals a change in their philosophy and how they're going to run their organization, that they're no longer going to go after these overpriced older players, that they're going to try to build and probably just supplement with them. So, you know, as a Yankee GM, I think it's business as usual. They're in first place. They're going to continue to have more money to spend than anybody. They're going to continue to throw that at a lot of players and see what sticks. And if it doesn't stick, then, you know, let's get somebody else. So, you know, Brian Cashman's been in that job for 10 years now, 12 years, something like that. And I don't think you have to be a rocket scientist to keep your job there, because you just need to write another check. So I'll stay with the Yankees. I like what the Red Sox doing. As a fan, I like that. But if I'm a GM, you know, I'd like to keep my job. So I'm going to New York.
Well, let me play devil's advocate. I mean, technically they're right now tied for first place. And again, they've been in a swoon lately. I know a lot of Yankee fans are panicking. I'm getting texts from Phil from the other show. He's worried about the Yankees. They got a lot of old players, and old players down the stretch tend to get tired, tend to get hurt. A-Rod's been out. Teixeira's got a calf injury. CC's hurt. I mean, I don't know if they're going to be able to just get out of this one. I mean, if you're looking 2 or 3 years down the road, and they're still paying A-Rod $25, $30 million a year, Teixeira's still on the book, CC's got 5 or 6 more years, I don't know if that's an envious job to have. What do you think, Hank?
Well, see, here's what you have to look at. If you're saying, okay, I want to be a GM of a team, and how much time do I have to build a team? Now, in most cases, a GM wants to build a team in his image, okay? Either he's a power pitcher type of guy, or he wants home run hitters, and then he's going to bring in a manager to be able to do that. If you're that kind of GM, you're going to want to go to the Red Sox. Why? Because the Red Sox have got deep pockets. They've just dumped a bunch of salary, but they've got a bunch of young players that's going to be with that team for a long time. You've got your Ellsberrys. You've got your Pedroias. You've got Middlebrooks. You've got a nice little young nucleus, and then you can build that team the kind of way you want to build it. Now, you've also got some money, so now you can go and get you a couple of free agents. You're not old, and if I'm looking at my chief rival, which is the Yankees, and I know they're getting old as dirt, I'm going to go there. I'm going to jump on that chance, because now I know I got an opportunity to probably win that in a long time. I know I got some young teams I got to go up against, but by and large, I'm ready to compete with them right now versus being old and having a bunch of contracts, old players, a bunch of contracts that, you know, I can't get rid of. I'm looking at the Red Sox.
So, quick question for you, Hank, and RJ. Tell me the last time the Yankees weren't old.
When Jeter was a rookie.
when they were winning World Series, actually.
Well, you know, around about 10 years ago, right? When Jeter was young, you still had Bernie Williams playing. Is that the last time they weren't old?
They've won one World Series since they weren't old in, 2009. I think, you know, they had that run where they were beating the Diamondbacks and,
yeah.
You know, when Jeter and Posada and Pettit and Rivera were young.
They beat the Phillies a few years ago in the World Series, a couple of years ago.
That was the last one they won, the only one they won as an old team.
Right, right. So it's been 10 years since they were young, right? And they've been to the playoffs, 9 of those years since?
Well, I mean, if you ask a Yankees fan, I'm sure they're in the playoffs, but they don't want it to be in the playoffs.
Yeah. I was just going to the...
They've done that. That's all that now.
Counselor, I was just going to the nature of the question, you know, which was, a GM, which team do I want to go to? I was just answering the question.
All right. I'm just trying to swing. I think I like the Red Sox, only because, you know, as a GM, I want to tinker and do whatever I want to do. I mean, with the Yankees, I think you're kind of set in what you can do because all the money is tied up.
That's
right.
True. And if you GM the Red Sox, you'll have free time in about 2 or 3 years to go do something else. So that's cool.
I think the listeners know, if they listen, my GM skills are impeccable. Some of the moves that I've thrown out there. But no, let's switch gears here a little bit. NFL football has started, and like I said in the beginning of the show, a lot of baseball fans tend to tune out. And they're checking their fantasy rosters. They're following football right now. So I wanted to throw it out there to you guys before we close the show out and just ask, you know, what are a couple things baseball could do to get out of the NFL shadow? I mean, this is technically the most exciting time of the year for baseball outside of the playoffs. And it's like it's falling on dead ears to a lot of people. Hey, what's one or two moves you make to bring baseball out of the ball circle?
Well, see, here's where baseball blows it, okay? You're absolutely right. This is September, okay? This is the hunt for October. This is when baseball, when all the games mean something. And what does baseball do? What does the Major League Baseball do? All their marquee games at this time of the year, when they're on national television, they're on when? They're on the weekend. When they're doing what? Competing head-to-head with college football and the NFL. It drives me nuts. They have the whole damn week. The NFL has figured this out. College football has figured it out. It's like, hey, let's have games on Tuesdays. Let's have games on Thursdays. There's nothing going on unless you have some sort of sports package where you can watch any baseball during the regular week. Think about that. They could have carte blanche. They could go back to the old school days. Sorry, Mike, where they could have the Monday night game of the week or the Tuesday night game of the week. There's going to be games that those teams are going to be playing, and I think people will watch. You know, we're talking about the Tigers and the White Sox right now. This is a Wednesday night. Unless you have a cable provider that has those games, you're not seeing that game. That could be on a prime time on the NBC. Nothing else is going on. There's no football being played tonight. But you know what? That's where baseball blows it. That's the one thing that I would change is bring back some of those games on prime time during the week when sports are slow. Baseball could have a monopoly.
Okay. Let me throw this one out there and get you guys' opinion on it. Mine is a little more radical and drastic, so I'm interested to see what you guys think. What about if we shorten up the season? I mean, we all know that, you know, the NBA, people get excited about the NBA come playoffs time, and that tends to carry over into the new year. Same thing with football. When the playoffs start, everybody is on 10 about NFL. What if baseball shortened their season, started the playoffs in September, around the same time the NFL starts, and they show some of these playoff games during the day so that kids could watch? So I'm talking about shortening up the season, starting the playoffs in September, and having some of these playoff games during the day so kids can watch. Mike, what do you think about that?
I think that's a great idea. That'd be a fantastic idea. Get it where kids can watch the game without a doubt. That was a reason to skip school, right? I still remember 1990. I was a junior. Hank, I know you were probably at, I don't know, I can't even go there, I'm sorry, but I was in high school.
For now.
Wow. Anyway, I remember sneaking my radio into school with me so I could, you know, get my Walkman going and listen to the Reds play the Pirates in the divisional series. They ended up playing the A's, so that game was actually rounded around six. But the divisional series against the Pirates, I had my headphones in, listening to the game, and so that was a great thing. But to your question before, how do you get extra people to watch the game? I really believe this, that the mentality of the country we live in has changed, and that we're not a strategic country so much anymore. We want to see race cars that go fast and crash. We want to see the biggest athletes in the world run together and crash. We want to see guys slam the ball and crash the backboard. You know, and you know, this is going to sound sick and perverted, but there's two ways to draw people to baseball now, and that's seventh inning stretch female mud wrestling, or two, hit more pitchers in the head with the baseball off the bat. That's the kind of society we are right now. So unless you can appeal to those desires, they're going to have a tough time increasing the people who are watching the game.
So we're dumb, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying, a society's taste reflects what they like, you know? And right now we like collisions. We like violence. That's what we like about football. You know, the hardcore football fans like the 3-4, 4-3, shotgun, red gun, you know, the Tebow offense. That's strategy. But no, most people turn into a NASCAR race to see the car flip 10 times and go into the wall. Same thing with football. They want to see a guy hit so hard he's knocked out and flips four times in the air. And baseball, what's the equivalent of that? The catcher play at home, you know, and after Buster Posey got hurt last year, you know, they made it a point to say, listen, we don't want you blocking the plate anymore. Let him score. So how do you appeal to that crowd?
I tend to think that football is having the success it's having because it's appealing to gamblers. And I don't just mean Vegas guys making bets at the counter. I mean, you got fantasy football where money's exchanged. I just think football is more conducive to gambling, which, in fact, makes people watch. What are you doing?
I would also say the fact that baseball is on one night. I'm sorry, football is on one night for the most part. Makes it much more easier to be a fan. You know, same thing with if you guys play fantasy baseball as opposed to fantasy football. Man, that's a full time job. You know, they play nights a week. Damn. You know, I can't get that much on SportsCenter, but I can certainly do it one day a week.
Yeah. Hey. As a baseball purist, would you be okay with shortening the schedule, thus in fact putting some records in jeopardy?
Look, here's the thing about shortening the season. April baseball is boring, to be honest with you. I mean, they tried to move it up to March a little bit. You're not getting into the season. It's exciting. I could see shortening the season, maybe starting it later. But, there's something about October baseball, RJ, that's just is magical. You know, when you got that Christmas, it's Christmas in the air and everything, there's just a whole atmosphere behind it. Yeah, and so, you know, I'm not really in favor of that. I do agree with day baseball, especially in September, you know, or even in August, you know, before the kids go back to school, to start getting this thing rolling. You should be able to roll into the playoffs. That's one thing that the other sports have that baseball don't have. There is, when they start getting close to the playoff crunch, everybody's watching, you know, and those sports are right there on the front. You can just turn on any channel and you're watching playoff type of sports, those games. Baseball, you got to wait till the weekend unless you're a purist like us and you're looking for the game. You're going crazy if you can't find it. And I think baseball has more opportunities to change that than the rest of those sports because they play more nights in a week.
But keep in mind, Hank, under my scenario, you're still having September baseball. It's just September baseball is the playoffs. So what's now September will be in August. And you know, as a Tigers fan, when we were in the World Series against the Cardinals, that weather was horrible in October, November. So now
right.
You're moving the playoffs up to September, and you're also avoiding some of that crazy weather. I mean, I just think the season is too long,
And like Mike was saying with fantasy baseball, it's hard for somebody to follow 162 games when there's so much other things in life going on.
I agree with you there. I mean, I can see that. You know, once upon a time, it was a 152-game season, or something, 154-game season, something like that. And it was a magical time in baseball. I know, Mike, you were just a twinkle in your dad's eye at that time. But, you know, back in that day, you know, you did have playoff baseball, well, what was considered playoff baseball earlier in the year. And it was the heyday of baseball. So I could see that coming back.
Okay.
Do you think that has more to do with expanding it from two divisions to three and then adding not just one wild card but two wild cards? So if you think about when you were a young man, Hank, there was just an American League and a National League and no playoff. Is that right? You won the pennant, you had the best record, you win.
No, when I was a young man, there was 11 teams, and if you finished in first place, you won the World Series.
Oh, whoa. Oh, wow. Hey, RJ, it's Moonlight Graham. We got Moonlight Graham on the show tonight.
Oh, man.
If you're going to tell it right.
He used to root for the Philadelphia A's, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, let's all turn up our radio. We'll sit around the fire and listen to Hank tell old baseball stories.
Uh-huh.
All right, before we close it out, we talked about the playoffs. We talked about Hank, tell me one thing that has you intrigued about September baseball this September. What are you really looking out for out of this September?
Well, listen, you know what? I'm excited because all of a sudden you're starting to see teams starting to make that push like last year. All of a sudden, teams left for dead. Milwaukee and Philadelphia are all of a sudden in the playoff hunt. Philadelphia right now is three games out of a playoff spot. I thought they were done, okay? All of a sudden, here they come rising out of the ashes. You know, I'm concerned about Washington. What's their psyche going to be? They had to shut down Strasburg because he just couldn't get into it because they knew they were going to shut him down for the season. What's that going to do for this team in their first attempt into the playoffs, you know? The A's and the Orioles will not go away, okay? They didn't spend any money in the offseason, and yet there they are. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you still have the Tampa Bay Rays and the Cardinals still doing their thing. So it's going to be a fun 20-plus games left in the season.
All right, that was 20 things from Hank. Mike. What one thing are you looking for to come down the stretch?
Well, he can't remember a lot of things. They just keep coming up. So it's all right. Let Grandpa go for a while. Wow. Well, you know what? I look at the adding the second wild card, right, and what difference that made in both leagues. And really in the American League it's a non-factor because you've got the top three wild card teams are tied. Plus, you've got, you know, the teams that are in fourth, fifth, and sixth position are all within 2.5-3 games. So whether that was one spot or two spots, all those teams would still be in it. To Hank's point, the National League really just opened this up to a lot of teams that, you know, are certainly flawed, but you feel like they could make a run, okay? And the team that I'm going to tell you that has gotten zero pub since May. And look at it, they're 3.5 games out right now. That's the Milwaukee Brewers. We haven't talked about Milwaukee other than Ryan Braun with his, you know, his herpes test, you know, getting him on the suspension list and then off since hey, we haven't. So all of a sudden you get Milwaukee coming in, and they've got three games against the Pirates. They got games against Houston. Cincinnati, you know, after Cincinnati's going to clinch. So why can't they go ahead and jump that team? Everyone talks about Philadelphia. Why not Milwaukee?
Good point. I didn't realize they were that close.
We don't talk about Wisconsin here. It's like a dirty secret.
It'll be your dirty little secret, Mike. As a diehard Tigers fan, one thing I'm looking forward to can be summed up in two words. Go Lions. And with that, that's another episode of Inside the Park. Catch us next week, 9:30. If you missed any episodes, please go search Real Sports Guys in iTunes and download whatever's there. It's been fun. We'll talk to you next week. Peace.